Be advised, the Digital Graveyard contains the following: adult language, bad advice, and spoilers. There will be no further warnings. Consider yourself disclaimed.
The votes are in. The ballots have been counted painstakingly, and your new president of the United States is the Digital Graveyard. But not really. I'm Graves. I'm one half of the show. With me as my co-host.
You got Bobby Digital here. And just
we will
so you
rule
all know,
with
we
an
are
iron fist is what we'll do. Was that what you were going to say?
Well, what?
I said we'll rule with an iron fist. This country will rule the day they elected us to president in any kind of legal capacity.
Yes, the iron fist that we acquired from Kun Lun.
Yes, we killed the dragon. That is how you become president of the United States, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very politically charged episode off the gate right now. What is the date? I cut you off.
Today is November 9th, 2020. And this is the Digital Graveyard, where we talk about all things nerdy, whether it be comic books, video games, movies, and more.
Yeah. Or occasionally how you kill dragons for political aspirations. Just like as true as it was for Iron Fist as it was for Game of Thrones. We always kick the show off with just some pleasantries, we like to call them. It's just things that we've been watching over the last week. Me and Bobby actually hung out IRL this weekend. Because, I know, the real world still exists. It's insane. A bar that we used to live near when we were still living together is closing down. Well, it is closed now at the time of this recording, but we had one last hurrah out there, even though we never really spent that much time there while we were living nearby. Then we hung out at the mall for a little bit, and we just sort of talked about it, because I had been out of town all week hunting. I'm not a very good hunter and therefore didn't hunt anything, but I saw a lot of nice nature. But that's not interesting to talk about. So I ran home after we were hanging out and just binge watched a bunch of different anime, some really weird stuff too. But we can get into that in a minute.
How weird? Because anime can get weird.
I guess on a scale from what's the maximum weirdness? Well, we'll say for the purposes of argument, we'll say Naoko Urasawa's Monster, you know, the least weird anime that there is, just a crime thriller about a serial killer in Germany, or Fooly Cooly. I guess this would probably be a little bit shy of a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It's not as weird as JoJo's. I can't even tell you specifically what the name of it was either, because it was in Japanese. I think it's Rise Up Animal Road in Japanese, because that was the English subtitles underneath the title card. This anime is not insane. It's how do I begin?
I don't even know what you're talking about. I do want to just say real quick, I've also never seen JoJo.
I'm not surprised by that. I'm sure you will eventually. And I'm sure you will either fall into a complete spiral of loving it. I'll pause my description of Rise Up Animal Road to tell you briefly about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which, a little bit of backstory, is a insanely popular manga in Japan that was never actually adapted into an anime until recently. It's inspired video games. It's actually one of the characters in Street Fighter, Guile, was inspired by a character on JoJo's who was a Nazi originally. It's just the weirdest anime, and it was supposed to be kind of like the One Punch Man of its time, in that it was just a parody on big, muscly, tough guy anime. Not necessarily Dragon Ball Z like One Punch Man is supposed to be a parody of, but
like a parody
like,
of like Fist of the North Star.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It was a parody of Fist of the North Star. Just these really tough, stoic guys who never say anything but can kill somebody with one punch. I'll tell you what, our good friend Chris, who got me into JoJo's, you don't really need to watch the first two story arcs. You really don't.
I've heard that like JoJo is like a generational thing as well. Where
it is,
like
it is. It's the Joestar kind of follows, family. Like,
yeah, it's a different protagonist within each arc, season, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and the reason for that was because the author, I guess, never really. Our friend Chris is the biggest JoJo's fanatic, so he's told me literally every fact about the show. The author never really knew what he wanted to write a story about until like two seasons in. But he knew that he wanted it to be just a ridiculously over-the-top muscle guy anime. So the first season is about Jonathan Joestar, who's like this just really tough British guy from this nice family, and his adopted brother Dio is just inexplicably evil. So you know the memes. Yeah, he says that all the time. I've seen t-shirts that you thought it was a t-shirt, but it was me, Dio. And it's hilarious if you watch the anime. The other thing I should point out is, yes, Dio is named after Ronnie James Dio. There's a million and one American rock parodies in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, or characters specifically named after people in rock and roll, because it was that weird point in the 90s where Japan was just obsessed with our music.
Yeah, like I think back to like Mega Man, for example, which
exactly.
is totally predicated on the love of rock music.
Exactly.
But one of the games specifically names all the Robot Masters after members of AC/DC.
Yeah, there's three villains in Chrono Trigger named Axel, Slash, and Lemmy. You know, or isn't like Iggy and Lemmy are two Koopas in Mario? You know, it's that weird point in the 90s. Just everybody was all about it. So there's a million and three. There are two characters that were they did have to change some of the characters' names for like the English version. But there's three characters named AC/DC, Cars, and Wham in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. There's also the Mystic Wiseman Tom Petty, like Tom Petty, but it's one word. And a character named like Robert Edgar Speedwagon, like REO Speedwagon.
God.
It's not even gotten to the crazy parts yet. So the first season is about Jonathan Joestar, like the first in this bloodline, and his evil brother Dio, who finds a mask that turns him into a vampire, and there's like zombies. They have to fight zombies. The second season is about his son in New York, named I think just Joseph Joestar, and this is like after World War II. It's his grandson in New York, and they have to go fight Nazis and from bringing back Dio and the evil demons that gave him his powers. And then it goes to his Japanese great 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 grandson, who's Jotaro Joestar, voiced by Matthew Mercer in the English dub. And then they have the power of stands, which is a really weird thing to describe, but it's basically like Shaman King, kind of.
Yeah, I was going to say it's Shaman King.
It's like kind of like Shaman King. It's not exactly that. It's because Shaman King, they're ghosts. Stands are like the anthropomorphized power of your willpower. Or something insane like that. And that's as far as I've gotten. I know the show just keeps getting crazy, but it is kind of the third season with the stands and Jotaro Joestar that everyone kind of focuses on. Because it's just nuts. It's nutty, dude. And it's all like crazy high technicolor stuff. But that's Jonathan, that's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and you should check that out, Bobby, because you're either going to hate it or I don't think you're going to hate it. I think you're either going to fall madly in love with it or just say, it's not for me. But
from what I've heard about, like, the battle scenes and everything in JoJo is, like, with the stands and their abilities, it's not necessarily about, like, who is stronger. Because, like, Jotaro's is, like, by default, like, the strongest, right?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
pretty much.
Yeah, it just always is. I mean, they all have, like, a specific ability, and it depends on kind of how they use it. But, yeah, Jotaro just shows up and Goku's the hell out of everybody, you know?
Right. But that's kind of my point. Like, it doesn't necessarily matter that his is the strongest. These other people have ones that, like, affect him in a different way. Like stopping time or whatever bullshit.
Yeah, there's one that it's if he wins a bet against you, he steals your soul. Like that's one guy's ability. There's one that's he draws like characters in a comic book and it comes to life and things like that. It definitely gets really good after the third story arc. But you can kind of skip the first two. But yeah, I just have one day you will check out JoJo's, and I would be very much interested in your opinion on it. But going back to this anime that I just started watching, because I actually didn't hate it at all. There's a trend that's been going on for a good while in anime, but it's kind of reached a fever pitch right now of people from our world who get transported to a magical world, and they are very, very good at existing in this world. You know what I mean,
yeah,
Bobby?
An isekai, yeah.
Is that what they're technically called? Because I've just been describing them how I did. An isekai, is that the official genre?
Yeah, that's like the genre. So like things like Alhazard,
Overlord.
Dot Hack,
yeah. Overlord, Sword Art Online, How Not to Summon a Demon Lord. There's a million of them. So this Rise Up Animal Road is one of those. And looking at the title card on Hulu, it was just it's a shirtless dude wearing a collar and a Speedo. So I wasn't
okay. It's sexy.
So
yeah.
It looks bizarre. Well, here's the thing. It's okay. It's gonna be. I'm only three episodes in. And it is. He's a professional wrestler. And Japan really takes their wrestlers seriously. He's Animal Mask in the wrestling ring, but all he wants to do is win this last fight so he can open up his dream of owning a pet shop. And he's got the cutest dog ever, and his dog's name is Hiro Yuki, who is the main character in Gundam Wing, if you recall. That is a reference to fucking Gundam Wing, and I loved it.
Is it? Oh my god.
Hiro Yuki is the main character of Gundam Wing! It's his dog's name. It's adorable. Anyway,
I didn't like Gundam Wing. But
fuck you. Anyway, I am
losing all my nerd cred right here with this anime discussion here.
You were more of an SP Gundam fan. Anyway,
I was though.
Awesome. Oh man, we should have a Gundam episode. Anyway, where was I? So yeah, this guy gets the fantasy world summons the greatest warrior from our realm to there. So right while he's about to pile drive his opponent, he gets summoned to a fantasy world, and then immediately gets in trouble with the law because he suplexes their princess that summoned him. But basically they're like, it's a human kingdom, and they summoned him to fight the demon beasts. And when he heard that he would have to hurt animals, he was not having it. So he meets up with some beast men, a beast woman. And I know what you're thinking, Bobby. Yes, it is kind. I bet furries would really enjoy this anime, but they make a bajillion jokes about that. So it's very tongue in cheek, like the sense of humor. There's a scene where he's like, there's a girl, a dragon that's disguised as a girl, right? And he's like, I'll have to don my mask to handle this foe. I'll really have to figure out if she's a dragon or not. If she's a human, she won't fall for this simple bait trap. And then he's like, the food, albeit it's not the best. And then he's just like, oh, the food's okay. And he turns around, she's there in the trap. And then he's like, so are you really a dragon? And he's like, I'm not going to tell you. And then this mob of angry villagers comes up and he says, hey, look at that weird sex pervert. He's got a girl in a cage while wearing a mask and no pants on. And he's like, what? No, it's completely innocent. He's like, I don't know. You are wearing a mask and have no pants on right now.
Oh, my God. That sounds great.
Yes, it's weirdly become hilarious. And like, it's not anything special, but I'm really enjoying it. And the other one that I just watched, only the first episode, because that was the only one that was dubbed. Yashahime. I checked out the first episode of Yashahime.
Oh yeah, and how do you feel about it?
It's a little tough to tell from the first episode. They have like six, but I only watched the dubbed anime, you know. Yeah. There's three.
I'm like four episodes into the sub.
Okay. Yeah, so you know there's three daughters, right? And two of them are Inuyasha and Kagome's daughters. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, only the girl in red is Inuyasha and Kagome's. The other two are Sesshomaru's.
The other two are Sesshomaru's daughter. Okay, that makes more sense. But they don't explain that in the first episode, so I didn't know. But yeah, I gotta say, like, they've got almost the entire cast for the dub, and
I think the only one they didn't get back was Kagome.
Oh, and it didn't really feel like they even missed a beat, you know? I felt like I was watching a continuation of Inuyasha watching the first episode. I really did enjoy it more than I thought I did, because I don't remember liking Inuyasha a ton. I watched almost all of it.
The first fan art I ever made was Inuyasha.
Ooh, wow, DeviantArt days. Right. But no, yeah, I will be really excited to kind of to keep watching this as they premiere on the internet, you know.
Yeah. I am really liking this trend with anime of, like, you know, bringing a lot of the older shows back.
Well, you got to thank Dragon Ball Super
for
that.
It's for us.
Yeah, like, you have to thank Dragon Ball Super. They opened the door to that, and we're all the better for it, I think.
Yeah, Yu Yu Hakusho will come back with a movie.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say there's one more, but I can't think of it right now.
It'll come to you.
Sailor Moon came back.
They did, and also Fooly Cooly came back for a second season.
Yeah.
So it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff, and I don't think anyone's really complaining, because they've all been pretty good so far.
Yeah, what we need, though, is a Trigun continuation.
Bobby, you knew I was going to say that.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna like be
our
the most
souls are
for that.
Connected so much. Trigun, my favorite anime ever, the only anime I will unapologetically admit I own a wall scroll of. I fucking love Trigun, dude. I would love to see a continuation of Trigun, just because he beat the big bad at the end of Trigun. You don't need to continue it there, but they did with a movie. You know, there are more stories that you can tell on this ridiculous desert planet with this space alien cowboy. It'd be fucking awesome. Trigun's great, dude. Anime's great. Look at the ridiculous sentence that I just said. Space alien cowboy.
And that's fucking great. And that's like, there's a ton of anime with that theming going on.
Dude, I can think of a million more bizarre anime than Trigun. And that's the joy of it. You know? It's great. So that's what I've been watching. I have also not really been watching it, not really in depth, you know, but I have been turning on Code Lyoko, because it's on Netflix now. I'm doing other stuff, I usually play it in the background, because I'm not, you know, I even when it was on and it was new and we were in school, I wasn't like in love with it. But I do kind of want to see how the story progressed and how the story kind of concluded, or if it even did, you know?
I think that's one of those shows that once they solved the problem, they were kind of like, what do we do?
Maybe. I will
say,
the
whole thing was getting that whatever her name was out of Lyoko.
Yeah, yeah, Aelita.
Yeah, and they do it.
They do.
And then it's like, okay.
Yeah, as I recall, once they got her out, I haven't gotten to this part while I've been rewatching it, but as I recall, it was because she was still like a computer program. If they shut the computer down, her body would go into like a coma or something. So that's
some
why they didn't
BS,
do it immediately.
Yeah.
And then it was after they solved that problem, they added another character to the Lyoko team, and he got abducted. And the whole story became, how do we get him out now? Which I vaguely remember. That's kind of when I stopped watching. So I would really like to see the conclusion of that story arc, which is primarily why I'm watching it. But like I said, it's really good to have like a cartoon from your childhood on in the background while you're just doing stuff. You know, it's a good way to kind of to get yourself caught up or like refreshed without really like investing too much like mental time into it, you know?
Well,
and that's
yeah,
what
like I've been rewatching Gargoyles, which I do once a year.
Yeah.
Like, best show of all time. But it's my first time introducing my girlfriend Reba to it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we were talking about this on Sunday. She's never seen Gargoyles. Cause of course she hasn't. She's what, like just a few years younger than we are. But Gargoyles was already kind of an old show when we were kids.
Yeah, Gargoyles, I believe, premiered in 1990.
Wow, yeah, I wasn't even born yet. But god damn, if Gargoyles isn't the best, it's so good. We talked about this on the last episode. Gargoyles is so good.
Yeah.
Beyond Gargoyles.
That, we also binge-watched The Owl House, which we spoke a little bit about together. But I just want to like put it out there, like The Owl House is fucking great.
Yeah, I mentioned it for our Halloween episode because Disney Plus added it for Halloween, I'm assuming. And it's the perfect show to binge watch on on Disney Plus. Because it is like a spooky show. And what is it? I called it the spiritual successor to Gravity Falls.
Yeah, which at first I was like, this has to be by Alex Hirsch, right?
And he's heavily involved in it. It's not created by him, but he voices several of the characters.
Two of the best characters.
The two best characters. The two best characters, Hootie and King. Hoot, hoot. I don't even think the show is like, I'm not going to sing its praises from the mountaintop, but I just, it's so adorable and wholesome in a really, it's that, Owl House is the show that I wish Star versus the Forces of Evil was, because I remember just not being able to continue that. Like, it was cute, but it's not, like, I'm an adult watching a children's show, I'm not going to watch Star versus the Forces of Evil, but I will sit down and watch Owl House, because it's witty, it's charming, and it's adorable. It's so cute.
Yeah. Star to me just eventually got a little too girly. like there's no better way to say it, because the main character of Star is
she's a fairy
over
princess.
The top girly.
Yeah.
Luce in Owl House is nothing like her.
Yeah. Luce is like so many girls we went to middle school with. You know?
Yeah, pretty much.
No, it's great. It's really good. And since like Alex Hirsch, every line that comes out of one of his characters' mouths is gold. It's comedy gold. It's hilarious. In the same way that Gravity Falls was. Not knocking Star versus the Forces of Evil. We're just adults. We can't help but watch this from the perspective of adults watching cartoons. You know.
Yeah. Well, like in general, modern day cartoons have gotten so much like. They do that fine balance nowadays.
They're better than when we were kids.
Mature,
they're better than when we were kids. I'll say it. I guess I should take that back. There were plenty of amazing shows when we were kids. But a lot of the stuff that I remember watching was just like Ed, Edd n Eddy. Ed, Edd n Eddy's great, but if I was a kid rewatching it, or if I was an adult who had never seen Ed, Edd n Eddy and I went back and watched it, I probably wouldn't enjoy it as much as I did having the nostalgia of it, you know? Whereas, like, Gravity Falls, I have to sit down and say, wow, this is a really well-thought-out and written story, you know?
Kind of stuff. And even the episodes that seem like they're not worth anything are, like, play a major role later.
Yeah.
Like, they will.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, and Steven was like that. Gravity Falls is like this.
Exactly.
Star
yeah,
is like that, but
oh, it is.
Not so much.
Yeah, whereas Ed, Edd n Eddy never moves past that cul-de-sac, and the only time they do is for the movie. Like, and you never see more than, like, the six kids that are in the whole thing. Whereas all of the shows that we've listed off are, like, these worlds that have been thought out and had so much work put into them. It's an entirely different animal from the cartoons that we were growing up with, you know? Yeah, so Owl House and Gargoyles, have you been watching anything else?
That's really it. I do have put up on my queue like a bunch of like anime I need to watch. I need to get back into Food Wars, for example.
Yeah, Food Wars is one that's kind of tough to keep going on just because it is such a long syndication of it, you know. And it's like Naruto. It's like Naruto meets the Food Network. It's one of those slog animes where it's just like a million episodes and they're all more or less the same thing with a story that just kind of builds off of it. But it is, Food Wars is good. I will be the first at bat for Food Wars. It's a great show.
Yeah. Well, and we have rewatched a little bit of Bleach.
Cool. I haven't done that in a while. I might give that a go. I never really got too invested in Bleach.
Well, Bleach is interesting because like, there's really only like maybe three filler arcs, which like a lot of anime do.
Yeah.
But the bad thing about Bleach is that they all happen in like this like 20 episode period.
So they're like mega fillers. So the fillers are almost arcs.
Like, okay, so one of them is like an arc, but one of them literally happens like between episodes of a big fight. Like Ichigo and the character's name is Grimmjow.
Oh, I
like,
remember Grimmjow, yeah.
Yeah, they're beating the shit out of each other, and then it's like, who will win in the next episode? And then an arc, like a filler arc.
Oh, man. Anime.
Yeah. Anime
is ridiculous. But, and,
No, as far as like those older shonen anime, like Bleach was never like one of the big ones for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we both watched. I mean, we both went to the same high school. I remember we both watched Bleach. But yeah, it didn't seem like, compared to a lot of people, we weren't like all about it. High school for me was kind of when I started moving more towards like
mature anime.
Well, I don't even want to say mature. I said finite anime. You know, the 24 episode arc that I have come to love. Whereas like the Narutos and like I didn't have the energy to watch another Dragon Ball Z, like to tune in every week to watch this story that just drags out for years, you know. And Naruto, what really killed me was the last third of Naruto, where it was just all an endless barrage of filler episodes.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't even care about Shippuden at that point.
But didn't you watch all of Shippuden afterwards?
Not all of it. No, I still haven't watched all of Shippuden. I did. That was the last anime that I really like, would wait for the new episode to be uploaded on Daily Motion. And with a fan
Daily Motion.
With a fan dub, you know, or just really, really sketchy subtitles. They would have those weird, like, the subtitles would always be done by a fan. So they'd have, sometimes you'd get an episode where there would be like a little pop-up info screen that would fill you in on some of the jokes, like the cultural jokes, you know?
Yeah.
That was the last like time I really got invested in like trying to watch it. But there was a point where I was just like, I think when the last members of the Akatsuki die and Sasuke becomes the new Akatsuki, that's when I stopped. And I tried rewatching it a few years ago. I haven't even gotten to that point yet in rewatching it. I'm sure I'll pick it up again sometime. But I got Dragon Ball Super to watch. So
yeah.
Sorry, Naruto. Well, I'm gonna watch Dragon Ball Super.
And shoot, now there's Boruto, but you know what? Best girl won. Hinata won. Like,
hey,
so.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for
Hinata
her.
Was the best character.
Like, she is.
Screw anyone who says otherwise.
But I don't know,
I think,
man.
We should
Shikamaru.
Move on some of the stuff.
I don't know, man. Shikamaru.
Shikamaru is best girl. You're right.
Shikamaru is best girl. Shikamaru is best girl. Hashtag Shikamaru.
He is patient.
Yeah. Good things come to Shikamaru. That's the name of the episode. Anyway, so yeah, that's what we've been watching. Do you want to mosey on into some? Because we had a couple of juicy tidbits of news to talk about.
Yeah,
for the second half of this episode.
There was a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. So So the Xbox, what is it called now?
The Xbox Series X.
Yes, the Xbox Series X just came out today.
Yeah.
So
it begins
with that. Yeah, with that news of the Xbox Game Pass has come out, and one of the big rumors—it's not officially confirmed yet, although like it more or less is—is that their Xbox Game Pass, which is kind of like our PlayStation Plus, where
yep.
it's like we get internet access as well as free game goodies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It'll come with Disney Plus when you sign up.
Which I'm not – I just found this out when you told me before we started recording, and I'm not surprised isn't the right word because, well, we know – Xbox has sort of laid the groundwork to make this a very competitive console cycle. They've been buying up a lot of small publishers and small developers. They've expressed a big interest in sort of branching out from just the AAA games. You know, they want to challenge the PlayStation this time around, and it's interesting because Disney Plus has also, well, Disney in general has also expressed a lot of interest in really putting a lot of focus into Disney Plus and really trying to make this a Netflix competitor, which we've talked about before. I'm pretty sure on the air, but definitely in private, that Disney Plus really hasn't been rising to that challenge yet. The first year of Disney Plus, and it has been a year by now, it came out last November, if I recall.
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
Was they had The Mandalorian. That's
it was rough.
They had,
like,
The Mandalorian. That was it. And everybody after The Mandalorian was done got rid of their Disney Plus. Like, well, a lot of people did. Not me and you, because we love Disney movies. But if you've seen all the Disney movies, what really is there for you on Disney Plus? The only original content they were producing was to children's movies and shows and things, you know, and family-friendly entertainment. So until the Marvel movies start coming out, there's not – they really can't compete with Netflix. If they weren't Disney, they wouldn't be able to compete with Netflix. But the fact that this deal is being rumored, this is to be in the works with Microsoft, makes a lot of sense to me, because these are both two American companies that have more money than God, and they have the ability to create and back competitors in both of their respective markets, and they have both expressed interest in being competition this time around. So it kind of, in a weird way, makes sense that these two forces would join together. To what extent, we'll see. Like you said, it's not – I don't think it's been confirmed. But
yeah, the only kind of for sure thing that's come out is that Xbox Game Pass on Twitter just – is tweeting a bunch of stuff about Disney Plus, specifically about The Mandalorian and all that.
Yeah, I don't
and a
think
few of the other new shows they have.
I don't think they'd do that if there wasn't something in the mix. But who knows? Maybe they'll listen to this episode and be like, "Oh, hey, that's a good idea," and then do it. Maybe we incepted the idea.
Yeah, because everyone listens to us.
Everybody who works at Microsoft and Disney, I'm sure. Anyway, sure. Pay us, Disney. Sponsor this podcast.
God.
Do it.
Yeah, no,
you
for
cowards.
Real, Disney. Hit us up, man.
Microsoft, it's fine. You don't have to. Anyway.
I'm not too proud to take Disney's money.
I will take Microsoft's money, if I'm being honest. Yeah, the Xbox Series X, buy it. It's great. Anyway, so that's interesting. We've got more stuff to talk about, unless you want to elaborate more.
No, we can move on. DC Comics is saying that they are looking into getting away from doing a shared continuity between all their comics.
Yes, I read a little bit about this before we started recording today, and it's interesting. It's interested me. Because
that's like a huge move.
That is,
like
that's
one of the big selling points of both DC and Marvel Comics.
For decades. It's not inaccurate to say since the Silver Age at the very least. Has the shared continuity been a huge deal? You know, ever since the Justice League formed, was shared continuity a huge deal? You know, and it makes sense from a marketing standpoint, saying like, wondering what this character's talking about? Check out this issue of Wonder Woman, or you know, but
yeah,
I guess my question would be for DC. I'm not opposing this idea at all, because it would open the door for more interesting narratives when you don't have to worry about the burden of continuity, because frankly it is a burden to keep track of all of that. You know, George R. R. Martin, the guy who did the Game of Thrones novels, he has people that he pays to keep track of the continuity that he comes up with. Like, that's how hard it is to keep continuity, you know?
Yeah, and imagine doing that between like a minimum 30 titles currently 30 going.
30 titles, exactly. It's so difficult. And then there's a reason why we have the multiverse, is so they don't have to do that. They have to invent whole universes so they can tell a different story. I get it, DC. I get why DC would want to do this. My question to be would be, what's the extent and to what capacity? Like, because if you're going to have a Justice League comic book, are we to believe that all of the Batman in this Justice League comic book is not the same Batman in the Batman comic book, and vice versa for all the other members, you know?
Are we going to do a we can even be like, all these related characters still exist in the same universe. So yeah, Batman, Nightwing, and all of them still exist over here. Superman, Supergirl, all that's over here.
So, but is there no Superman in Batman's story arc? It would be my question. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or do they do exist, but it's not the same Superman from the Superman comic book that's going on right now. So that's the big question on my mind after I found out about this. And there's a million and one different ways they could go about it. But I'm sure whatever they do will produce good stories.
Well, like, it's not even like an argument saying that some of the best DC stories only involve a handful of characters, and they're not related like the Justice League characters.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, for real. Like, so Green Arrow's not canonical with Batman? Tough break. Like, who cares? They're pretty much like, the same
the
character.
The Killing Joke is a great book. Superman's not in it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You know? And there have been great stories. Like The Dark Knight Returns. Everybody was in The Dark Knight Returns. You know, not just Batman. That's fine. But they were also...
That's an out-of-continuity book to begin
with. Exactly. And they were all very clearly and specifically not supposed to be the characters that they were. Like, you know, Wonder Woman's black, I think, right? Well, Catwoman's definitely black. I think Wonder Woman is.
Wonder Woman's not, but...
In The Dark Knight Returns, I might be thinking of a different Frank Miller comic.
Yeah, then. She's, like, extra, like, boxing buff.
yeah, and, you know, Superman being Ronald Reagan is canonical in The Dark Knight Returns. So I get it. I totally get... I mean, it's a bold decision. It really is. I don't think it's going to be, like, earth-shattering, but I think it's going to... I think we're going to see a lot of interesting stories, you know? Or like, the other thing that... Oh, yeah, for new readers, definitely. But the other interesting idea would be, okay, so we have Batman's story arc. What if they choose to introduce a version of Superman into Batman's story arc at some point? But what if it's not the Superman from another comic book? What if it's Red Sun Superman or something, you know?
Sure. Like it all exists in the Red Sun universe or something?
Yeah, so like another Superman lands in another country. What if Superman lands in North Korea in Batman's story arc? Like, think about that. Or what if the any other superhero is just a little bit different? You know what I mean? What if it's Injustice Superman? There's a lot of things that they could do, you know? And that's exactly why they're doing this, and we're just going to have to wait and see. But this will, I think this isn't going to be the last time we mention this decision in the show.
When I was talking about this with Reba, because she's relatively new to comics, like, I just use the example of, like, Deadpool is married to Death, who Thanos has a crush on.
Yeah.
And right there, that, like, blew her mind right there. Just like, what?
Yeah, like, Death is the concept of Death is in love with Deadpool.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, like, that's comics in a nutshell. But, like, you do away with the whole shared continuity thing, like, it's not quite as messy.
Well, because also... Deadpool's married to the Queen of the Succubus as well in another continuity, you know?
Same continuity.
Oh, in the same continuity? Really?
Yeah, I think he's divorced
from
Death.
The Queen of the Succubus. Oh, wow. okay, well, if the lack of continuity that DC's talking about existed, then you could have two entirely different versions of Deadpool. Deadpool is a happily married man. But
we can finally have a happily married Batman.
We could. We could have a Batman in Wonder Woman. We reveal Bruce Wayne where his parents didn't die. He's just like a normal guy, like a normal billionaire. Lobbying for lower taxes or something. Like, that's the entire... Oh, my God. What if in Superman's story arc, in which non-canonical to any other Justice League DC titles, Batman's parents never got killed. So there's no Batman in the Superman story they have. And you still have a Lex Luthor, but you have Lex Luthor and Bruce Wayne. And they're both billionaire assholes who are, like, trying to you know, take over.
So, like, one-ups each other.
Yeah. Not necessarily, but neither of them are villains, per se. They're both just industrialists, you know? And they cause a lot of problems, but not ones that Superman can fight with punching. That would be a story. I would dig that. I think Scott Snyder could get behind that shit.
That is interesting. Have you ever read the book Superman Speeding Bullets?
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, in that one, Superman crash lands in Gotham, and the Waynes find him. And this is before they have Bruce. So they take this baby and they name it Bruce.
Wow.
Right, so, like, he grows up rich and everything, they still die in an alley because the mugger shot at Bruce and it bounced off of him and hit them.
Wow. That would be, that's wild, actually. I got a Speeding Bullets, it's called?
Yeah.
If there's a book I'm looking for, I'm going to check that one out, actually. That's an interesting concept. I love the what if arcs, you know what I mean? Even if it's just like an annual or something, like I love them.
I love the Elseworlds books. They're great. There's one where like Batman becomes Green Lantern, and yeah, most of them involve Batman.
One of my favorite Marvel lesser known characters in Marvel is Wolverine's son Dakin, who had a book for a while called Dark Wolverine, because he was in the Dark Avengers filling in for Wolverine when Norman Osborn bought the Avengers. And basically what you need to know about Dakin is he's just a sociopath. He's completely insane. He was raised by like a ninja cult in Japan, and he's got three claws, one out of his wrist and two out of his knuckles. But he's completely insane. He's not necessarily a villain, but he is a sociopath, so he doesn't care what happens to people. And he has been directly a villain in several story arcs. But one of my favorite what-ifs ever is what if Wolverine didn't go into a killing rage after his wife in Japan died, and he instead was able to hear that Dakin was still alive, do an emergency C-section, pull him out, and then stay in Japan, never become part of the X-Men, just focus on raising his son in Japan. But the abandonment issue isn't Dakin's problem. The problem is that he's a sociopath. So even with a loving father, it still ends with Wolverine and his son fighting to the death, and it's one of my favorite what-ifs ever. I love them. I love, like, non-canonical one-shots, you know? And
right.
Basically, this could be everything for DC.
Man.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Freedom to have fun. Freedom to have fun. That's what DC is doing. They're giving themselves the freedom to have fun with this, you know? And that's what makes good comic stories, or at least memorable ones.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, and I've spoken with a number of like writers and artists who have worked on a variety of titles, and the one I'm thinking of specifically, his name is Ben Percy. I don't really want to like get him in trouble here, but
his name out if you want.
Okay, well, it's kind of all important. He was writing
Green Arrow,
the Nightwing,
right?
Book.
Oh, was it Nightwing?
Yeah, he was writing Nightwing at the time. And because in the Batman book, Nightwing got shot and had, like, brain damage, like, he was pretty much told, like, well, now your Nightwing book has to change.
Yeah. Yeah, because of course it has to.
Right. Like, well, what the fuck is he supposed to do? It's like, yeah.
If Green Arrow got shot and had brain damage, no one would care. But it's Nightwing, and it's Batman, and it's Batman. And it has to impact the stories. So yeah, like as a writer, you can kind of see the shackling effect that has on your work.
Right, because
so,
I'm sure it was Tom King at the time. I'm sure Tom King was like, well, he's a supporting character in a Batman book, so like it's impactful to me to like injure him in some way.
Yeah.
But like In Percy's case, it's like, well, that was the main character of my book.
Like... Yeah, for sure, for sure. And that not also the increased prevalence of special events, you know, which when I was, I'm sure they're still happening because death metal's still going on, right?
Yeah, there's like a new one going on.
Yeah, and when I was at peak comic book reading, you lose money trying to keep up with all of these special events, you know? And it's just a couple of times a year, at least like four times a year, whatever book you were focusing on would drop everything and deal with it. Like three issues would deal with whatever was going on in this greater context of this universe, you know?
Oh, the worst case I ever had of that was the Spider-Geddon book was going on.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, okay, I'll just all the Spider-Man titles, right? That's not so bad.
Yeah.
Turns out there's four Spider-Man titles just starring Peter Parker. And then it's the Miles Morales, the Spider-Woman, the Ghost Spider.
Yeah.
And then they invented a few titles for that event. It's like,
wow.
Fuck you, Marvel.
Yeah. of course, Secret Wars 2 was a big deal, too. I have every issue of Secret Wars 2. It takes up a whole long box. That's how, like, literally every Marvel title had to be tied in with that. You know, it was excessive. And I don't see that stopping for Marvel anytime soon. But I wouldn't be shocked if that went into decision making that DC is expressing here. So we'll just have to see. I'm sure we will mention this decision more in future episodes because it's going to come up when we talk about any kind of big DC news. We're going to have to ask ourselves: is this canonical to everything else, or is it just canonical to this? So it is. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. There's a lot here. There's a lot here to dissect.
Yeah. Yeah. So you want to move on to the next thing? We're kind of already talking about Marvel, so I say we just kind of move on.
Absolutely, and we're at the 45-minute mark. We've been cruising through these, so let's give it another go. Sure, let's move on.
All right. So a few days ago, Greg Wiseman was on Twitter. Those of you that don't know, Greg Wiseman is best known for being the director and lead writer of Young Justice.
Oh.
Gargoyles.
Hey.
Yeah. And the Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Now, Spectacular Spider-Man is the best Spider-Man cartoon. I'm not even going to argue.
Beloved interpretations of everything. I mean, we sing the praises of Gargoyles every chance we get. Young Justice has such a cult following. And and you heard it here, folks. Digital approved. Spectacular Spider-Man, best Spider-Man adaptation. Go ahead.
Yeah, for real. For real. But anyways, a fan just posted, every night I pray to the good Lord above that this show gets finished and that you come back to write it, Greg Wiseman.
Wow.
And Greg Wiseman just retweeted with, a smiley face semicolon, right?
And then he said, suck it, nerd.
The only reason this is a big deal is because, actually, We've spoken about these guys a few times too, Chris Miller and Phil Lord.
Yeah,
they directed or not directed, produced Into the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse, yeah, and a lot of other animated titles too. As it turned out, when we looked into them, we did almost a whole episode about those two guys that we
pretty
had
much
just learned about that day.
Yeah. So apparently, back in last April, or 2019 April.
Yeah.
They made a deal with Marvel that they would head up all of their animation endeavors. And one of the things they did mention is that they want to bring back a lot of their old shows.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not impossible for a new season of Spectacular Spider-Man is what you're saying.
Right. And Greg Wiseman, I guess, has said he has spoken with Chris Miller.
Wow. So I'm guessing nothing's been confirmed, right?
No, there is nothing confirmed. Just he's retweeting a smiley face because I'm sure he's heard many times. I wish Gargoyles or Spectacular Spider-Man or Young Justice come back. Young Justice did come back.
Hey, Greg Wiseman, why not all three? Do it. Come on, man.
Do the hat trick.
Come on, dude. Yeah, go for it. Go for broke.
Which that just makes me think, okay, so he had a hit cartoon with Marvel, DC, and Disney.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This guy, how is it that every show this guy pitches should get picked up? This guy should
much.
Be this guy should be who was it? It was the Pendleton Ward, right? Or Lauren Bouchard created Bob's Burgers, you know? Everything they touch, a network wants to pick up. You know what I mean? Cause who wouldn't want that? But Greg Wiseman, this guy, he's got three home runs under his belt. You know, he's the unsung hero of animation, frankly, it seems to me. Animaniacs just got picked up again. Everybody's chomping at the bit to revitalize old canceled cartoons.
Yeah. Which Animaniacs, what? That's in a week? Oh my gosh.
I think so. Yeah. Hulu's been advertising the shit out of it. It's got to be coming out soon.
Yeah.
It is
the
almost
18th, maybe.
Time. For Animaniacs. Hashtag almost time for Animaniacs.
Name of the episode, boy. Almost time for Animaniacs.
But, there we go.
But yeah, a big thing that Phil Lord and Chris Miller said is that, as well as bringing back their older shows, they want to make like new programming. One of those, I believe, is probably MODOK.
Oh.
Which we talked about a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be great.
that was probably like part of their their ideas they were coming up with, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, and then this is just kind of big news as well, because at the end of the month here, Disney gets Daredevil back as well. So hey. Disney's really trying to bring get the fans back, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're aiming for Netflix. They want to compete with Netflix, and their Marvel gains is frankly Netflix loss, because Daredevil, I mean, the Defenders was a big chunk of Netflix budget at the time. Those were big titles that they were putting out, you know? Those were their water cooler shows for years, you know, as House of Cards was coming to an end, as Orange is the New Black was kind of wearing thin, they had the Defenders. And now Disney has the Defenders. At least they have Daredevil. And Charlie Cox has been in talk to reprise the role, but I don't think it's been confirmed yet, has it?
Not that I'm seeing.
Oh, God, I hope they just can pick up right where they left off and keep going with Charlie Cox. I really do.
Yeah.
Because that gives you hope for the rest of the actors and the rest of the characters to reprise their roles. In what capacity, I'm not going to say. But a couple of cameos with Luke Cage and Iron Fist would be totally cool with me.
We just need Rosario Dawson back, man.
Yeah, Night Nurse. Make it happen. Make it happen, Disney Plus.
Give her a show.
It's Marvel ER.
Put her in the Doctor Strange movie, because Night Nurse plays a role in the Doctor Strange comics.
Oh, sure. Yeah. She fights zombies, too. it's so cool stuff. Cool stuff, man. I always feel a little empty talking about stuff that hasn't been confirmed, but we can't help it, you know?
That's most of what we do. It's like, until there's solid things, all we can do is kind of like talk about how excited we are for the idea of it.
And not
you know?
Just us, you know, people who don't have a podcast, who are just talking in the comic book shop. This is what they're talking about, you know, because that's the culture. This is all we have. We have to talk about this. We cannot talk about the possibility of it. We are past the 50-minute mark, though, so we might as well move on to the next topic of discussion. We had a few more if we want to pick one big one to end the show on.
Yeah, we'll pick something that I feel you're a lot more excited for, Over the Garden Wall.
Yeah, I am. And you've watched it, right? You've seen it.
I've at least watched, like, a couple.
Well, there's
only
10, Bobby. You can finish it in an afternoon if you're motivated. It's so good. And they're not, like, full half-hour episodes. I think they're only, like, 50-minute episodes. But for some elaboration, for people who might not know, Over the Garden Wall, like we were talking about where we are adults. We are grown men who watch cartoons, and we don't say that with shame. We enjoy the animated format. We really do. It is an art form.
Actually feel like entertainment's going to move that way, especially if COVID lasts longer.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell, you know. And I mean, it certainly is an accepted form, a semi-accepted format in Japan. It's definitely Japan's influence has had an impact on the United States. Clearly, look at Castlevania. Look at The Last Airbender. You know, my cousin who's older than me, who's married to a weeb. I love that my cousin married a weeb, because now I have something to talk to her about. He got her to watch Legend of Korra. So at her sister's wedding a couple weeks ago, we were talking about The Legend of Korra. And I love that. I love that it's like now you can finally enjoy this. Like somebody showed you that. Like everybody has a cartoon that they can watch at any age. And Over the Garden Wall might be that show for some people. I'll explain a little bit about what Over the Garden Wall is. It was a series of short episodes that Cartoon Network put out, I want to say in, what, 2012?
I have 2014.
2014.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a little bit later. I definitely did not have cable when it was on. I did not watch it when it premiered. I watched like sped up YouTube episodes of it, and then I went to Target and bought the DVDs because I needed to own it. Because it, to me, is I still watch that show. I often describe shows as like good falling asleep shows. Like Over in the Garden Wall is a perfect falling asleep show. It's so relaxing, but if you want to pay attention to the story, you're going to be blown away. And it's just this It's two kids who are lost in the woods. One of them played by Elijah Wood, because of course he is. Elijah Wood was in Lord of the Rings. He never needs to work again in his life. He just gets to do weird stuff that he wants to do. And I'm sure if you're listening right now, Elijah, we become fast friends. If you ever want to hang out, if you're ever in the Twin Cities or I'm ever in L.A., we can talk about Maniac. We can talk about that movie you did with Sasha Grey. Whatever, Elijah, I'm here for you. I know you're listening.
I really liked you in Wilfred.
Right, Wilfred. Wilfred was great. Free Willy. What a movie. Anyway, the faculty. Elijah, you and me. You, me, and Digital. We can just sit down and have just... We don't have to have any microphones recording at all. We can just have... Shoot the shit, you know? We can talk about that movie, that video game you made with Tim Schafer and Double Fine. I know you want to talk to somebody about it. Anyway, Elijah Wood, how
God
are you?
Knows Graves wants to talk about it.
Elijah Wood, how are you? Are you doing okay? I genuinely want to know. So he stars in this Over the Garden Wall, and it's a very simply drawn show. They're very circle and square characters, and that was very intentional because it's supposed to be a show that harkens back to the old Merry Melodies kind of Hanna-Barbera Warner Brothers cartoons. It was also made by Pat McHale, who is not a well-known animator, but he's friends with Alex Hirsch. He's friends with Justin Roiland. He's like all of the modern animators now. They know him. They went to school with him. And I think the success of Adventure Time and a lot of the other weird shows the Cartoon Network was exploring at the time kind of got his foot in the door for this. And I just found out that a friend of mine might have dated his best friend when she still lived in California, if it's the same Pat McHale. She knows a Pat McHale who went to art school and had an idea for a cartoon that he wanted to pitch to Cartoon Network. I just don't know if it's the same one.
But that's too much of a coincidence, you know?
It's a little too much of a coincidence. But the legend goes that this guy, he came up with the idea for Over the Garden Wall while he was in art school. And for 15 years, he was working on the story for this 10-episode miniseries. And it's about two kids lost in the woods, but it quickly becomes apparent that this story, these woods are a purgatory, an allegory for purgatory, that these children are probably in the barrier between life and death. There's a lot of some subtle symbolism and then some much less subtle symbolism. There's a really terrifying demon that's after them and wants their souls. There's a talking bluebird that was cursed by a witch that is voiced by John Cleese. Tim Curry's in an episode. It's spectacular. I loved it so much. And you can watch it in just like an afternoon.
Well, yeah, like you said, they're like 15-minute episodes, and there's only like 10.
Yeah, and it's got this weird indie folksy soundtrack, too, that just – I remember one time I made my girlfriend watch it, and her mom walked in the room and was like, what the fuck are you kids watching? I was like, it's going to get really hardcore in a few episodes. Right now, they're just on the weird singing animal episode. But there's going to be like some creepy German fairy tale elements, too. So it is creepy. It's the perfect show for Halloween, but the news was that Pat McHale might be working on a spiritual successor to Over the Garden Wall. To what capacity, we don't know. He just kind of hinted at it in an interview.
I've been reading through this interview here. It seems like he is trying to pitch a 18 episode season of a spiritual successor of some type. He doesn't really say what it's about or anything. All he said though is that he's not making a direct sequel to Over the Garden Wall.
Yeah.
Just because he kind of feels like he's done with that world.
Yeah. So that was my question. Was it going to inhabit the same world, which is called the unknown in Over the Garden Wall? And like I said, it was an allegory for purgatory. But as you know, because I know you're such a fan of medieval Italian literature, Bobby, that there were three books in that series: Inferno, Purgatorium, and Elysium. So he could pick the other two, you know, and make a children's show about those. But yeah, in any case, I'm very interested in this. I don't know. You seem moderately interested. I'm very interested because it's genuinely like if somebody asked me what cartoon is art, I would point to Over the Garden Wall. It's beautiful, and I'm a big fan. But we are going to have to end it there. We are getting close to the end of our time here. Is there anything else you want to end on, Bobby, before we go?
No, I say we're pretty good. There's obviously some more stories which you can find on our Twitter and our Facebook page. We have shared them.
Yes, we're The Digital Graveyard on Facebook. We are at @digital_graveyard on Twitter if you want to give us a follow or a like, share, and subscribe. If you want to retweet us, even, you know, if you want to take snippets of audio from an episode and post that, you can do the hashtag The Digital Graveyard. That's fine too, you know. Just anything to get that out there, you know. Let us know that you're listening. We would really appreciate it. It's a big, kind of a big deal for podcasts, I'm finding out.
Yes, getting snippets out there.
Well, just, you know, getting people to talk about and sharing our stuff, you know, share it with your friends. In any way, if a whole hour is too much to share with somebody, get a snippet out there. Like, I'll try to edit clips for YouTube, but I'm bad at that. In that case, you can find some old episodes on YouTube. They do not upload very timely, but we are also on Google Podcasts. We are on Audio Boom and we are on Spotify. If you want to check those out as well, you know the drill. Like, share, and subscribe. Other than that, thanks to John Wheeler and Sam Dunn for the use of our theme song. Thank you to Eric Castellanos Art for the use of our logo. And thank you to Bobby Digital for just being such a special guy, you know? Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
Now play
you've
us
touched
out.
Me in, you've touched me in ways that only a woman has.
Okay, all right.
I don't know what that was.
Get a real honest episode. We'll see you next time.